This is Scott Becker with the Scott Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Rick Kess. Rick is a brilliant partner at RSM. RSM is a leader in sort of the private equity middle market world. He's going to talk to us about a couple of the trends he's watching in private equity investing today. Rick, what are some of the key trends you're watching in PE investing today?
Yeah, Scott, I think, at the risk of being cliche, I'd probably say tax reform being one big issue that seems to be getting a lot of attention, and whether that will, push some sellers to market, maybe before they were totally ready. And perhaps, obviously with that increase in potential supply, maybe bring down some of the deal multiples that we're seeing, pre-tax law change consideration, or the other thing that we're kind of tracking and seeing a bit of an uptick in is, unique deal structures as it relates to tax law changes and trying to strip out some of the impacts that tax law reform might have on, continued business operations and or, the tax impact to the seller from a capital gains perspective. So, being a tax audit and consulting firm, naturally, we're going to be tracking the tax law change pretty intently. And that's been an area of a lot of focus from both our clients and as well as internally, for sure.
So if the capital gains tax doubles, as has been proposed, that would be a debacle and drive a lot of sellers to want to do business now, because otherwise their company's got to go up in value by 20% to reach the same value. If it goes up more than 5 to 8% that it was under the Reagan era, then that has a more muted impact. Like if capital gains goes up to 28%, it doesn't drive the sale decision quite as much, although it's still a significant, you got to do 8% better in your company to make up for that 8% additional taxes. Is there a sense at RSM as to whether this will be hit somewhere down the middle or whether the Biden administration will get the whole enchilada of the doubling of the capital gains tax?
Yeah, I think, we were initially probably more bearish on that and thinking that they were, probably going to have a little bit better chance given, the numbers within the House and the Senate, from a Democrat majority perspective. But as, negotiations have continued to, evolve and, different senators in particular have been taking, maybe more conservative approaches, even on the left, I think we're probably getting a little bit more optimistic that, we might not see, a full doubling of the capital gains taxes, but, like you said, something kind of in the middle. So, it's again up in the air. No one truly knows until it actually goes through, right? But I think we probably, at least I think I would put myself as a little bit more optimistic as it relates to perhaps something slightly a little less dramatic than double the current tax rate.
And I know that the Biden administration tried to dampen the concept of tax-driven selling by trying to say that the tax change would be retroactive to April something, to whenever it was announced. Is that likely to be the case, or is that just positioning to avoid a rush to the exits by people?
Yeah, again, it's hard to guess, but I think what we're again hopeful for, is that the retroactive piece of that is hopefully very difficult to get through. I think a lot of people on both sides of the aisle have voiced, some concern about that. Obviously, there have been retroactive tax impacts before. It's not completely out of the range of possibilities, but, I personally am optimistic that is not the case, in particular for several of my clients who have recently closed transactions. I think it would be a bit of a big surprise for them to have that impact, for sure.
Thank you. And what other trends are you watching? What other things are you thinking about this year? This tax reform has potentially have big impacts on asset values, on closability transactions, and so forth. Fascinating to hear about unique structures driven around this. You know, if the, you know, because people are driven to sell based on tax changes. We've seen this over and over again, driven to sell by the tax changes. The tax changes don't happen, and then somebody has seller's remorse. What are some of those unique structures? What are some of the things you hear about?
You know, we're seeing things like, you know, obviously everybody always has, you know, a working capital adjustment or an earnout provision, but, you know, building things into that earnout provision that kind of mute the effect of a tax law change or the you know, the impact of no change. So, you know, basically, you know, flushing through some of the impact through the earnout calculation to kind of mitigate some of the risk on both sides. From the tax law impact. So, yeah, I think it is very interesting and, you know, something that, you know, obviously part of what we get engaged to do a lot of is to evaluate earnouts and network and capital discussions between buyers and sellers. So it'll be something that we will spend a lot of time kind of evaluating over the next, you know, 8 to 12 months, I presume, kind of given that it can be significant to both sides, and it, you know, something that they're contractually trying to kind of mitigate some of the effects of.
What other trends are you watching in business right now? What are you most excited about right now?
You know, I think the biggest trend, and it's such a macro issue, you know, is the labor force and what is going to happen as some of the states continue to move away from, you know, the unemployment impact, you know, the $300 additional unemployment benefit and some of those things. Will that have the effect that, you know, some hope that will put people back in the labor force? You know, what other things are going on within the labor dynamic, you know, given, you know, the people that left the labor force, you know, a lot of them, you know, may not actually come back. You know, maybe they enjoy, you know, staying at home and, you know, doing things that, you know, they couldn't do when they were fully employed. So, you know, it'll be an interesting, you know, piece to see is, you know, who comes back into the labor force. How can we get people to back into the employment roles? And, you know, how do we get away from this problem that we consistently see is our clients coming to us and telling us they can't hire enough people. It doesn't matter, you know, on the low end of the skill perspective or the high end of the skill perspective, it's incredibly difficult to attract and retain talent. So, you know, I think it's a really curious thing to us, and kind of ancillary to that or somewhat related is, you know, what companies do with their return to work perspectives. You know, I've been talking to companies across the United States about, you know, what they're going to do in terms of requiring people who don't have to be in the office. You know, what do they expect their employees to do? Do they expect them to be in the office? Are they okay with them working remotely? And how hard are they going to push them to do one or the other? And what will that do to their kind of ongoing retention efforts? So, you know, I think the worry of the next 6 to 12 months will be, how are you attracting, retaining, and recruiting people? And how successful are you at that? Because I think that will be one of the impediments of growth for those who aren't, is not being able to get the people they need to be able to grow the businesses the way they want.
I mean, there are a ton of those concerns. And there's partially this concept that some economists have said is, look, as these enhanced unemployment benefits roll off, that's going to take some of the inflation out of the labor market. But we both realize that that's at one part of the labor market, but at some of the other parts of the labor market, that's not going to have a big impact. I mean, you're still going to have at a professional services firm or a professional services company, there's just a lot of competition for that talent as long as things are booming.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, the unemployment benefits aren't going to affect our ability to hire people. Yeah, I mean, but a lot of our clients, for sure, you know, depending on, you know, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of our clients that are in maybe in the senior living sector, you know, and things of that nature, a lot of the people that they are hoping to get back into their communities to be able to provide services to their residents. Some of them are probably benefiting from this temporary bump, and will this be enough to get them to come back? Or were there other reasons those people weren't working? You know, was it safety or other concerns that they had that, you know, was keeping them from coming back earlier?
There's a lot of health aides, a lot of people at different levels that are closer to minimum wage employees with the unemployment is just as well as the minimum wage they're doing, if not better, that creates this kind of tension. And it's a very complicated political, social tension. And you're right. If people aren't coming back, they don't feel safe. That's a whole nother set of issues to deal with versus just feeling like the economics don't make sense to come back. But a lot of these, you know, healthcare is a very labor intensive business still. A lot of the labor is still at the lower rung of the labor ladder. And so it's absolutely a fascinating thing to watch, and we'll see how it plays through. In any event, Rick, it's always a pleasure to visit with you. Rick's the partner at RSM and truly brilliant. Thank you very much for joining the Becker Private Equity Podcast today.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.